Hi, good morning, everyone. I'm Susan Klitzman. I think many of you probably know the story of the New York City sugary beverage portion cap rule, but we have a unique opportunity here today to each tell our narratives and to think together about how we're going to move this important issue forward together. We have no financial disclosures to admit to, but I am a member of the New York City Department of Health. So we often rely on journalists to promote public health campaigns and agendas. And on the one hand, we rely on journalists to be objective. Journalistic standards emphasize neutrality and factual accuracy. And on the other hand, we often see that the way journalists frame news stories by highlighting certain facts and obscuring others can really shape public opinion and the political discourse. So that's the lens through which we looked at the New York City Board of Health portion cap rule. In New York City, in June 2012, the New York City Board of Health, which is an 11-member mayorally appointed body that enacts changes to the New York City Health Code, proposed capping the size of sugary beverages served in restaurants and movie theaters at 16 ounces. And this was the first such proposal in the nation. And what we want to look at today is how the media covered the rulemaking process and the lessons we learned for future campaigns, many of which I expect to be echoed by my colleagues here, but some may be slightly nuanced or different. After doing a NexusLexis online search, we identified newspaper articles, including news stories, op-eds, and features, over a five-month period, approximately 1 month before the proposal was announced, until 1 month after it was adopted by the board. We identified 189 articles, but we only included those which were primarily about the sugary beverage portion cap rule and were non-duplicative. So with that, we identified 97 unique articles. And my first message, perhaps not surprisingly, is that language or lexicon really does matter. We actually found zero articles using the search term sugary beverage portion cap rule. Almost all the articles we found were using the more pejorative term soda ban. How about that? We analyzed the articles, similar to my colleague from California, based on when the articles occurred relative to the rulemaking process, how the media framed the issue, either pro, con, mixed or neutral, and then we also analyzed the predominant arguments, pro and con. So not surprisingly, like other public health issues, coverage tends to be ephemeral. Within a day or two of each event, when the proposal was announced, when it was published, when there were public hearings, and when it was adopted, there was a peak in coverage, and then it dramatically fell off. And out of the 97 articles, over half of them were decidedly opposed to the rule. Only 17 were decidedly in favor of the rule. And so when we looked at the predominant arguments in support of the rule, we found that the single largest category was rooted in health and science arguments. And these are just some of the common pro sugary beverage portion cap rules we found in those articles. And so for every article, we actually categorized all the different articles. One article could have more than one argument, both pro and con. But just to highlight some of the more poignant quotes, on the health and science side, 32 ounces of Coca-Cola pack 400 calories and 20 teaspoons of sugar, about a quarter of the recommended caloric intake for an adult. The cap might help usher in a change in attitudes toward overeating in the same way that many Americans have come to regard smoking as inconsiderate. We're not taking anyone's rights. If you want to order more than 16 ounces, the restaurant will serve it to you in more than one cup. If you want 32 ounces, buy two bottles. No one is stopping you. Beverage companies should be ashamed for trying to turn the conversation to freedom rather than obesity. After all, the industry wants the freedom to sell supersized junk. And we have a board of health in New York City for a reason, and that's to take the issue of protecting the health of citizens out of the political process and put it in the hands of health experts. Economics, obesity costs the nation $95 million a year in medical expenditures, and almost 80% of the global market share of soft drinks is controlled by three companies. There they are, Coke, Pepsi, and Dr. Pepper. And their decisions aren't a reflection of popular demand. Their decisions actually create public demand. Against the rule, we found a somewhat different pattern. The predominant arguments were rooted in values. And these are some typical arguments that we found against the rule: no scientific basis, it would have low public support. This is an example of the nanny state, an adverse impact on small beverages, very similar to the anti-tax arguments. And finally, this is a legislative or electoral, not executive branch of government matter. And so some typical cartoons, arguments: there are only so many measures the government should take. Then Mayor Bloomberg's proposed action is literally the food police. And you can see here this sign, "Welcome to NANNY State." Why are you taking this piecemeal approach, which you don't even necessarily have the science to back up? Look at all the other unhealthy foods that you're not regulating. Stores and restaurants respond to consumer demand and sell things people want. Those decisions can't be changed by a municipal ordinance or pushy health inspectors. And theaters make up 85% of their profit on snack sales, and soda and candy are the two most popular items. The NAACP says New York soda restrictions will hurt minority-owned small businesses. The mayor wants to do this by fiat. We're not going to let one man become king, an overreach of the Board of Health's powers, possibly a violation of interstate commerce, and we don't need more burdensome regulation. So how does something like this happen? I mean, after all, we so often rely on the media to promote health messaging. And once again, we see that immediately upon announcing the rule, the beverage industry launched a high gear, well-funded public and media relations, political and legal campaign against the rule. And here we have a picture of one of their staff standing on a street corner, collecting signatures with her iPad for a petition against the rule, wearing her industry-funded T-shirt, "I picked out my beverage all by myself." And then a very intensive media relations campaign. I'm sure you've seen some of these. Mayor Bloomberg as the nanny, Mayor Bloomberg as the food Nazi. So not surprisingly, the rule was announced in June and voted on. There were public hearings in July, and by August, when one of our local papers did a survey, and note the wording of the question, "What is your opinion of the soda ban?" it was published that 60% of the populace was opposed. And then finally, a month after the board adopted the rule in September, the legal challenges began. And note the coalition of plaintiffs and note the order in which they're listed. First, we have the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce and the Korean American Grocers Association, so small minority-owned businesses. And then we have the unions, the workers, the soft drink union, the Teamsters. And then finally, at the very end, as if they're less important, the industry associations, the restaurant association, theater owners, and last but not least, the beverage industry. Well, fast forward 2 years, in June 2014, our highest court, the New York Court of Appeals, upheld overturning the rule on the grounds that the Board of Health exceeded its regulatory authority. And the court argued that earlier initiatives like banning trans fat were okay because those had a more direct link to health and represented minimal interference with personal autonomy. But like my colleague, I feel this is only the beginning of the chapter, and we actually have good evidence that this initiative, despite the negativity of the media coverage and the intensity of the industry's anti-campaign, has raised the debate and awareness in the general population, so that people are talking more and more about the size of the beverages and the size of other portions that they're consuming. And we even had some industries, some businesses who voluntarily complied with the rule. So I think there's some lessons to be learned here as well, which I'll briefly summarize. Obviously, we need to do a better job anticipating and planning for a well-organized industry-funded opposition. Despite the fact that the Department of Health had a very prominent and well-orchestrated campaign, this is an example. It was prominently displayed in subways. Are you pouring on the pounds? We do need to reframe the discussion, reframe the issue of sugary beverages from a personal failing or a simply medical issue to a social justice issue. And to quote one of my colleagues, Nick Freudenberg, we need to expose the perils of the disease-promoting evil corporate nanny who seeks to profit at the expense of human health. Our former Mayor Bloomberg was one of the most public health-oriented mayors we've had in several decades, and yet he wasn't exactly a person who came from community organizing background. He came from a corporate background, and so the idea and the importance of making sure you have community alliances and grassroots support was just not part of his style. And so clearly, as my colleague mentioned, that is key to future efforts. We need to analyze all of the campaigns that came before us and make sure that we incorporate the lessons into future campaigns. We need to do a better job of educating our top reporters and media folk about the issue. And we need to anticipate the kind of legal support and financing that we're going to need to launch counter initiatives. And so again, I too feel energized by the recent victory in California, and I expect to see many such effective campaigns in the future, and I look forward to working with all of you to learn from our successes and from our failures, and I am pretty optimistic that our future holds a lot of good health-promoting policies and improvement of the health of the populace. So thank you very much.